Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Karen.
And I'm Paul. We know that stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the world of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
Hello, my name is Karen. As nurses working in continence care, we're often used to teaching ISC and comfortable with everything that comes with it. But what is it like for a user being introduced to ISC for the first time? Today, I'm talking to Jason Gunn, who has been using ISC for several years. Jason's going to tell us his story and also give us his insight into what it's like to learn ISC and manage his bladder with this treatment method. Hello, Jason.
Hello there.
Thank you for speaking to me today. I'm really interested in your background, your journey with ISC, and how you find catheterizing on a daily basis now. So I've got a few questions for you. Could you start by just telling us a bit about your background and why you use intermittent catheters?
In July 2007, I suffered a spinal stroke completely out of the blue. I was on holiday in Gambia at the time. Eventually, I was sent to Spain to begin with because it was the nearest place they could get me to. I'd never been in a hospital in my life. So the whole trauma of being completely paralyzed, going into spinal shock from neck down. And I didn't even realize at the time when it happened that I'd wet myself because I had no sensation there. And that happened sort of immediately after I had this neck injury, this spinal stroke. So I just collapsed on the bed. And I wasn't able to move my body at all. So I was, you know, completely shocked by the whole experience. And I remember being taken into a field hospital. And if you can remember what the program MASH was like, it was exactly like that from what I could see from laying down. Apparently, they put an indwelling catheter into me. I had no idea what was going on. I was air ambulanced to Tenerife, and I was in Tenerife for about 3 months. For sort of diagnosis and some treatment, although they weren't quite sure what the problem was. Thinking back about when the indwelling catheter was in, my mum was sent over to sort of be with me at that time. And I remember one evening she was sitting by the bed and all she kept doing was looking at me and then looking underneath the hospital bed. And in the end, I said, "What's going on?" Because I can't see. I couldn't move my neck or anything like that. And she said that the bag was red. It was full of blood. And I remember the Spanish nurses coming in, sort of faffing around down there. And I was, you know, quite distressed by the whole thing. And they dealt with whatever the problem was. And that leads on to ISC later. But I just thought it'd be good idea to explain that first. So anyway, so I was then repatriated back to the UK finally, sent to a local hospital, still had the indwelling catheter in. My bowels weren't working properly. I was impacted for about 9-10 days. So it was extremely painful and dangerous. And eventually I was then sent to the Royal London Hospital. And it was at that time that I started my journey with catheters, because although my body had gone into spinal shock, by that time I was able to move my arms in some way. My hands were still curved in, but I did have more function than I did when I was initially injured those few months before. So I remember this nurse coming onto the ward, and I was told that she was the nurse that was going to deal with my catheter. And she just stood at the end of the bed with this large green stick. And I just laid there in complete shock, because she just said, "You've got to get this inside you all the way." And I was like, "How the hell is that going to go inside me?" Anyway, she was adamant that she was going to get this catheter out of me, get the indwelling catheter out, and then start me off with ISC. So out came the indwelling catheter. I'd felt some sensation when she did it, because although they changed it each month through my first part of the journey, I think it was at that point that I actually felt something more than I'd felt before when they took the catheter out. My hands were shaking. My left hand was still curved in. My right hand was doing a lot better. So that's possibly one of the reasons why they said ISC would be the best step forward for me. So I started to insert this catheter, and my hands were just shaking, and I just got so upset, because psychologically I was frightened of doing it, and also I was mindful of the fact that my sensation had changed inside. So I didn't know whether I was forcing it too much or I wasn't forcing it enough. And I remember the nurse just standing there very sternly saying, you've got to be able to do this. And I just thought, you should have given me a bit more encouragement and a bit more reassurance. And I think that back then in 2007, I don't think that was the greatest introduction to ISC. I think, I felt very upset. And I also felt like a bit like a failure because I was being told that it was a simple function and I should be able to do it. And I was worried about, you know, they'd said if I kept an indwelling catheter in, I'm more prone to UTIs and other complications. And they said that, you know, to fit your lifestyle, this would be a better thing to do. So all those things she was telling me at the time. And I felt like an absolute failure because I just couldn't get this thing inside me. And in the end, they sort of gave up and they said, we'll have to get an indwelling catheter back into you. And I just thought, you're just not giving me a chance. You've not sort of helped me through this. So anyway, she tried to put an indwelling catheter back in. She couldn't do it. So she just said, oh, I'll have to get a male nurse. And it was all very sort of, it was the way it was done. It was the way it was delivered. So, you know, like I said, psychologically, that first sort of experience of intermittent self-catheterization, I thought, I'm never going to be able to do this. Never. You've not inspired me. You've not helped me. You've not supported me. The male nurse tried to get the catheter back in and he struggled with it. And eventually they had to get a doctor and put it in. And the reason why I mentioned about what happened in Spain was it turned out after doing what they call urodynamics on me, is that because the catheter had been forced in Spain, I landed up with really bad strictures in my urethra. And that's what was causing the bleeding. That's what was causing the trauma. And that was contributing to me having difficulty self-catheterizing as well. But it was this attitude of, it's your fault, as opposed to, can't we just see what the problem is and work together and find out how to address it? So anyway, so the indwelling catheter went back in. I was then sent to a local rehabilitation hospital. Their attitude was, that's coming out. You're going to pee normally. And I thought, why is it that the experiences that I've had so far have been so poor in terms of somebody teaching me how to look after my bladder for the rest of my life? And the downside was that I was sent to a stroke unit. Although I'd had a spinal stroke, I wasn't sent to a specialist unit. And the average age was like 70 plus in there. They'd actually got me to a point where I was walking with calipers and sticks very slowly. So the spinal shock was sort of dispersed, but I still had problems with bowel, bladder, spasms, all those sorts of things. But I had no idea what my injury was. I had no idea what the future held for me at all with it. So anyway, so this matron or whatever she was said, that's coming out. So they took it out. I was leaking. So I had a little bit of urgency to go to the toilet. So I kept going backwards and forwards to the toilet and I was draining very little. And again, it was upsetting me because they were determined that I would be able to go to the toilet properly. And I just believed them. They had no experience with spinal cord injury and I just believed them. I just thought, well, you're clinicians. You're the people that should know all these things. So I just took on board what they were saying. Anyway, so backwards and forwards, wetting for the first night, and then it sort of towards the early hours of the next day, I started to feel quite rough. And I said to them, I don't feel very well. And they were very dismissive about the whole thing. And I said, are you sure there's something all right with my bladder? No, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. And I just thought, okay, you're the clinicians. You're the ones that are telling me what to do. By the end of the afternoon and that evening, I began to shake. I was shivering. My head was thumping. My legs were spasming. And I said to them, I don't feel very well. And their attitude was, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. So that night when the night nurse came on, and she was terrific. And she went to me, I'm going to get a doctor. She said, because this is not right. So they tested my urine. But by then it was too late because I then started to hallucinate. I was then ambulanced to the main hospital where they treated me for sepsis and E. coli. And I had the most horrific time because I was hallucinating. I didn't know what was going on around me. I'd been put on IV antibiotics. Apparently I was telling the nurses to F off and I was screaming and I was shouting and that's just not me. And my mum was in there and she said, that's not my son. And they went, we know it's because of the sepsis. Anyway, I went home eventually and had intermediate care in the community when they were fantastic, but I kept I kept the catheter in because no one seemed to want to talk about it after that. You know, my GP was brilliant. She was fantastic. And I said, so, well, what's the long-term plan for this? Because I didn't know at the time that it was going to come out and I was going to be using ISC, which is what I do now. And I remember being invited around to my neighbours who were my friends one evening, and I had the catheter bag in it and everything. We're all sitting around the table and all of a sudden we're going, God, what's that smell? Apparently the bag had leaked all over their dining room floor. But we laughed about it. And I kept calling it, you know, it's my pet, because, you know, it was in a bag and it was my pet. And I remember the bag burst once and I was at home at intermediate care, and I phoned them out and said, look, you're going to have to get here quickly. I've placed the bag inside a Sainsbury's carrier bag and I'm struggling to keep things going. So the GP sent me to the urology department in the local community hospital, and it was then that I started to learn more about my bladder. And I think if I hadn't pushed it, things wouldn't have changed, things wouldn't have moved forward. So they were really good. So they scanned my bladder, they filled my bladder up. I had to wee into a spinning bucket to see, you know, what the levels were like, and then they scanned my bladder, and I was doing okay. I was sort of, you know, down to 50 mils each time, so I was doing, and I felt more confident. So I was passing urine naturally, if you can put it naturally, very slowly, but there was lots of urgency. I was wetting the bed during the night, which I found really distressing, and I just said to the unit, I said, look, I'm weeing during the night. I've got no idea that I'm doing this. I'm fed up with changing the bed sheets and scrubbing the mattress, and I can't physically turn it over now. And they went, no. So they started me on medication, but I was still having complications. And I just said to my GP, look, this is ridiculous. I can't carry on like this. I've got sleepless nights. I'm trying to work. I'm setting an alarm to go off in the morning to go to the toilet, which is useless because I've already wet myself. And they sent me to Queen Square. And it was that point where I saw sort of the golden light, because the nurse that was there and the team in the urology department and the professor that I met, Claire, she was just so inspirational. And she talked me through it. She explained exactly what had happened to me. And we're talking a good 6-7 months after I came home from my injury. So it was a long time. And I just thought, oh, this is just like a breath of fresh air. She said, right, what we're going to do is we're going to do some urodynamics on you. I'm going to get Botox injections to stop you from leaking. She said, and then we're going to start you off with self-catheterization. Of course, I sat there going, oh my God, not those horrible green things, you know, those green, those green staffs not coming anywhere near me. I said, no, we've got a new catheter that's out on the market. And because of you having strictures, which they said, you know, we need to sort of be very, very careful the type of catheter we use. And I thought, this is the sort of bedside manner I needed right from the beginning, you know, working with me, explaining things to me, because I think that when you insert a catheter into you, you've got to be relaxed. You've got to be relaxed. And I think that what that trauma, that sort of not psychological trauma, but the trauma that I had back in the hospital in London, it's a bit like the first 100 days of a 2-year-old child. You know, that they say the first 100 days is where the child learns the norms and things like that. And I think for me, I'd had such a bad experience that I was so frightened of doing it. So I met this really nice nurse and her team, and she talked me through it, and she sat with me and she explained how it went through, and it was like a breath of fresh air. I was just so excited because I'd got this inside me and I was draining. She was brilliant. She explained to me how the catheters worked. She sat with me. She said to me, right, slowly insert it. You're going to get to a point where there's a bit of resistance. You may have to do a little push, try and relax. And I did it, and I was just so overwhelmed the fact that I'd been able to do it, and I just felt so relieved. And I continued to be monitored by them while I was at home, and although they were the same length as these green wands that I was given, I think because the little tips on the end were so soft, and the lubrication, the process was just amazing. And although I did continue to get the odd UTI, which is a consequence of using any type of catheterization, it wasn't as much as I'd got when I first started my journey with the indwellings. So I'd realized that with the indwellings, I was getting quite a lot of infections, but with this was a real game changer. And I also sort of said to myself, right, I need to be very careful and mindful of how often I emptied using ISC. So if I felt a sensation around just below my stomach where it felt quite tight, I knew that I needed to empty My arms were tingling when I needed to empty, like goosebumps on my face. So I knew that they were my indications when I knew that I drank a lot and I needed to empty my bladder. And then that's how I started using ISC. I learned how to sort of keep a box at home, box in my car, box at work, getting the key to the executive bathroom, as I call it, the disabled toilet. So that's how I started my journey.
Part of me wants to say I'm sorry that it was such a traumatic time for you. That I think we know that doing ISC is a really scary thing for anyone. But if someone introduces it to you in such a brutal and almost bullying way, it's not going to set you up for success, really. And I'm just so pleased that you've found a place now where you are doing ISC. And it, you know, and it's a positive thing for you. And I think it's amazing that you've come that far, really. How do you find doing ISC day to day? So when we're teaching, we always encourage people and say, oh, this will fit into your life. And I'm interested in, is that a genuine thing? Do you feel it fits seamlessly into your life? Or does it require more attention than that?
I think because I don't know whether it's because I've been catheterizing for quite some time. I don't know, but it's just second nature to me now. I am just going to the toilet. And I think that the particular product that I use, it just makes it so much easier. I haven't got to faff around and cleaning my hands and doing, you know, finding solutions and things like that. You just open the packaging, open the catheter, you drain the excess liquid, the lubricant off of it into the toilet, you insert it. You pee and then you take it out and you dispose of it. And I think that although I take my time, because you have to make sure that you void it properly so you don't land up with any residual in there, which could form, you know, bugs, UTIs, that sort of thing. But for me, it's so convenient because I'm just going to the toilet. I mean, that's at home. So I get up in the morning, use the toilet, and I don't feel any difference the way I was before now, because it's just so discreet and it's so easy to use. Again, when I'm out and about, if I feel confident in a bathroom, I will transfer into the toilet and catheterize, no problem at all. So in terms of intermittent or catheterization during the day, generally it's fine. But like I said, if I'm out and about, it depends upon where I am. For me, intermittent self-catheterization has just become sort of second nature now. It's no longer a burden, and it's just the way I go to the toilet. And I never thought I'd say that from 2007. It's just the way I go to the toilet. It's not, oh, I've got to go and catheterize now. I don't get that sensation of it's an inconvenience. It's about thinking, I'm just going to the toilet. I mean, if I'm going on a flight or if I'm going to a wedding or any other things like that, I am lazy. Well, not being lazy, I'm being practical. I shove an indwelling catheter in.
Lots of people do. I've heard that many times, yes.
If I'm going to get on a flight, I'm going to pop an indwelling catheter in. Means I can drink as much as I like and discreetly get someone to empty it for me. It's in an airport situation, and you know, I went on a long-haul flight once and the steward came over and he said, well, we have got our own wheelchair on board. And we can turn the two bathrooms in basically into a Jack and Jill bathroom so you can go in there. And I thought, I wish I'd known this from the beginning, otherwise I wouldn't have bothered. But I do it as a precaution, I do it for ease. But I just find that for me, it's just my way of going to the toilet now. And it's just, I don't even think about the problems that I had years ago. It's just the way I go to the toilet.
Again, your positivity is fantastic that you've just found that way forward with it, and yeah, and it's working for you. You talked a lot about the way it was introduced to you. Have you got any advice that you would give to healthcare professionals who are teaching people ISC? I wonder if as nurses we become a little bit blasé, that there's certain things that are normal every day to us but are massive things to our patients. How would you get across any message that you have for nurses?
It's nice to have a smile and a friendly person to begin. Just simple things, you know, a little bit of courtesy to begin with. You're not treating me just as another patient learning to use ISC. I think that clinicians need to be mindful that, you know, if you've never been to a hospital before, if you've never had anything wrong with you before, and you've got to make lifestyle changes, huge lifestyle changes because of what's happened to you, I think it can be quite daunting. So having that sort of, you need to have a lot of emotional intelligence you know. And from a male perspective, if someone stands at the end of the bed with a rather large packaging and says that this has got to go inside you right up to this white tip or cone or whatever it is at the end, as a man, it's like, how am I going to get that in me? And is it going to hurt? And I think it's about stressing at the beginning the importance of why you've got to do it, why it's better for you, but also explaining the fact that the male bladder, the way it goes in, is far much longer than a female bladder. So that's why they're that length, but it's not going to hurt you. You know, you've got to relax. You've got to take your time when you're inserting it, that there's no rush, because the whole idea is that you as a patient have got to feel comfortable to use this on your own. It's about getting the person to take ownership of what they're going to do, but also doing it over a period of time. So as opposed to you've got to learn this today, you've got to do this today, I think it needs to be done over a period of time to get that person relaxed and to give that person encouragement. And, you know, if you're working with that person and that person's sort of putting it in and it's going in slowly and all of a sudden they feel the resistance, it's about that clinician saying to them, calm down, relax, take your time. You know, we've talked about maybe a little cough, perhaps just to ease it through. I'm not here to rush you. I'm not waiting for another patient. This is our time. You take your time to do it. And I think that not having the pressure of thinking to yourself that this nurse has only got an hour with me, because if someone comes in and goes to you, I've got an hour to do this with you, I think that sets the anxiety off as well. It's all that preparation. It's all that build up that you, as a clinician, when you're working with that individual. And it's praise. And it's saying to somebody, don't worry about it. If it's not going to work the first time, we'll take it out and we'll try again in a few minutes.
I know when I was teaching people, I would give that message that it is a process and it is going to take time to gain that skill and not to be disheartened if, you know, the first week is a disaster.
And don't worry if you feel something when it's gone in, because your sensation's changed. You're not hopefully going to damage yourself. I think that's the thing when you're using any type of catheter, you're worried about damaging yourself inside. So I think it's about that clinician turning around and explaining what sensation they may feel as they insert it and saying to them, if you can feel that little bit of resistance there, that's where it's got to go through, but it's about you relaxing. I mean, even sit and laugh and have a joke with them or something. I think it's, 20% technical and 80% emotional intelligence. Because, like I said, from a male's perspective, to think to yourself, I've got to insert that entire thing inside me to go to the toilet, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do that at all. And it's about changing the conversation or saying, well, actually, we're putting the independence back into your hands, basically. That's what it is.
I'd like to thank Jason for his insight and honesty into sharing his experience. His story has been valuable in helping healthcare professionals to teach ISC and support users more effectively. If you need further resources and advice on teaching ISC, you can find more information at colloplastprofessional.co.uk.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Colloplast Professional. To learn more, visit colloplastprofessional.co.uk.